Our next speaker is Mr. Allen. He began his radio career in 1966 with an early interest in broadcasting and amateur radio. In the years following, he received his first-class radio telephone and second-class radio telephone licenses from the FCC and a Bachelor of Science in Engineering. Mr. Allen has held various positions in the broadcast industry, including chief engineer at KNRO, Conroe in Houston, Texas, KLVI in Beaumont, Texas, and chief engineer, transmitter engineer at KTHT Channel 67 in Houston, Texas. During this time, Mr. Allen also worked on a contract basis with notable consulting engineer Merle Saxton, and under his tutoring became somewhat of an expert in directional AM antenna arrays and transmitter plants. More recently, Mr. Allen was the Vice President of Engineering and Chief Engineer at E.F. Johnson Company in Waseca, Minnesota, Vice President and Chief Engineer of Titan, Dalton, now L3 Communications, and Senior Vice President of Antenna Products Corporation. Today, Mr. Allen is a Vice President at Roan Tower Company in Peoria, Illinois. He is a registered professional engineer in several foreign countries, a senior member of IEEE, and a senior member of SBE for more than 35 years, and lastly, an active amateur operator with call sign W6PC. Please welcome Mr. Mark Allen.
Thanks, sir. Well, good morning. I'm going to start out up here and transition down to the floor here in just a minute for the pointer. I speak all over the country, and I've had a lot of fun with some demographic questions, if you all would humor me for just a minute. Are there any of you engineering types that have worked on transmitters with Western Electric tubes? Just show me some hands. Okay, Western Electric tubes. Probably know what a Potomac field meter is, too, don't you? That means you're probably in the 50-year club. Would that be fair? 50 years in the business? Okay. How about those of you that remember when the DJ had to have an Elkins School first-class license in order to change patterns at night? How many of you? Yep. About the same time, you were probably at a station that had the Boss radio format. Remember those? The old mod meter hung at 98%, transmitter was crying most of the time. How about spring reverbs? Anybody remember spring reverbs? God, aren't you glad those things are gone. How many of you remember the AT&T toll test board? Yep, toll test board. You actually got to speak to a real person with AT&T. Well, as we're moving forward, that probably means you've been in the business around 40 years. As we're moving forward, how many of you remember when you saw your first CD at a radio station? Yep, probably the 30-year club there. And then we move on forward. Well, there's a sure lot of experience in this room. I can accurately predict that because of all the gray hair I see, or in my case, not much hair. Oh, we have to have one of these today because we all have lawyers. This is one of my favorite expressions. Nothing happens until it happens to you. So let's just stop right here a minute and put a few things out on the table before we get on with the rest of this. On a more serious note, we're here today to talk about towers, more specifically your towers. And as part of my job with Roan, I'm on a team that investigates tower failures when it involves our products. And I've seen and heard a lot out in the field. It's a sad comment, but right here today in 2013, none of us can do business without an accountant and a lawyer. They really dictate the way we do our business. Sadly, in many tower accidents and incidents, there are serious injuries and deaths involved. Property losses can easily run into the millions of dollars. If you have not done your job as an engineer, it will eventually be found out in such an incident, and I guarantee it will be a CED for you. Do you know what that is? That's a career-ending decision. I hope I'm wrong, but my past practical experience says that most of you are totally unprepared for what will happen if you have a catastrophic accident involving your tower. And the purpose of today's discussion is for me to urge you to think in advance about some things that need to happen. You need to have a plan, not just for technical issues such as restoration of programming, but everything else. Now, here's some points that I've seen firsthand, and I'd appreciate if you just trust me on these and take them to heart. If there's an incident involving your tower, the first thing you should do is call your lawyer. You call your lawyer before you call the general manager. Make sure that person is standing right there beside you, and don't say anything to anybody until that person's there. The same goes for your whole darn staff. And that especially applies to your general manager or owner, Safety is paramount. After there's been an accident, make sure nobody else gets hurt in the course of responding. Have some law enforcement secure the scene so that things don't walk off. Take pictures and record everything. But have one thing in mind. Everything that you say and do in the course of this situation is discoverable in court, and it will be looked at. Here's a few other key points you need to keep in mind. Talk to your insurance company before anything happens. Find out what is and is not covered on your plant. What it takes to keep coverage in force. You, as the agent of the owner, or in your case, you may be the owner, may have to take certain actions like regular inspections, maintenance activities, and so forth. Insurance companies do aggressively seek to search out and find information in order to deny a claim. I've seen claims denied strictly because the station engineering personnel could not provide written evidence of recurring maintenance inspections. Don't get caught in this trap, please. You should have a maintenance program, but the maintenance program is no good if you don't document it. So do it and write it down. All right, enough of my soapbox. Let me get off of here and let's talk about towers now. Most accidents are a confluence of circumstances. Sometimes seemingly unrelated events all coalesce to create a disaster. This is true of a lot of things besides towers. Okay, this is a little bit off the screen, but this is a this is the causes of broadcast tower failures over a 50-year study period. Construction and erection errors, that includes maintenance. Anytime you have somebody on your tower, there's a 31% chance that they're going to cause a catastrophic problem. Ice accumulation, especially interesting to this audience, less interesting to those I spoke to down in Houston. Special wind. Special wind is things like tornadoes, hurricanes, and so forth. Derechos, if you know what that is. Believe it or not, aircraft strikes. More common than you would suspect. I've got some pictures in here. You won't believe it. And anchor failure. Interesting problem which is becoming more prevalent, and I'll explain to you why. Fines and lawsuits are something that's going to happen anytime there's a tower problem. Don't get caught on the stupid stuff. Follow the rules. Think of them as hints. Anybody remember when Chris Rock said that? If it's required on your site, let's use some common sense, folks. Keep the lights working, keep it painted if it's required, keep your fences in order, keep required signage up to date and posted. Keep some other signs around like, stay the heck out. And for Christ's sake, keep the FCC and FAA paperwork up to date. That is the easiest place to get caught. Here's a practical example. I believe if you'll notice the circle part there, right here is March of 2013. A $14,000 fine was handed out because a side obstruction light was out on a tower. I don't know about you folks, but that's a pretty darn expensive light bulb. Okay, the top's cut off, but if you treat your transmitter like this, how long is it going to be on the air? Well, not very. So why would you treat the outside half of your plant any differently? Tower systems require maintenance, just like you. You need an annual physical. You need your eyes checked. You need to get screened for cancer. You need to get your teeth cleaned. Your tower needs things too. Get a lighting checkup, physical inspection, transmission lines. They come unwired. Lightning protection, signage, gates, and so forth we've talked about. Maintenance is important. But if you walk away from here with one thought, what are you supposed to do after you do maintenance? Anybody? Keep a record. This is from the TIA, used to be the EIA, Telecommunication Industries Association. They're the folks that set all the rules and regulations for how our towers are designed and so forth. The 222G standard is current in our business, and this is a recommended maintenance plan right here. And it goes down a list of things. First year, every year thereafter, every 3 years, 5 years, and after severe loading conditions. What is that? Ice load. Ice load, severe windstorm, something like that. I started in this business in the 60s. We did a lot of stupid things that we shouldn't have done back in those days. I found this picture out on the internet. Here's a guy that doesn't have a lot of regard for his safety. We climbed without belts. We worked on hot AM towers. We fixed lighting, wiring at night while they were on. Thanks, that's better. We worked during thunderstorms. We had antennas and lines without any other considerations. We tighten guy wires with no instruments, and there's some other stuff I don't even want to think about. I know none of you have done any of this stuff. Particularly, who was that in the 50-year club? Yeah, you guys. You hadn't done any of this either, have you? All right. Anytime you are considering a modification to your tower, what's a modification? Adding an antenna, changing an antenna, adding a line, removing a line, adding a microwave dish, so forth and so on. You should engage the services of a qualified engineer or consulting engineering firm. I cannot tell you how inexpensive an insurance this is. Make sure that they've got one of these. Generally speaking, you will find that consulting engineers who are also registered professional engineers are pretty darn competent. All right, the number one single cause of tower problems is construction or modification. Here are some pointers based on my observations and experience. Select your steeplejack firm, tower climber, carefully. You should check their qualifications and experience. You need to make sure their experience is appropriate for the size and type of tower that you're doing. Roan manufactures kind of the world standard in little towers called a Roan 25. We manufacture 1,500 sections of that stuff a week. Where does it all go? I don't know. The tower guy that I would call to put up 100 feet of Roan 25 is not the guy that I would call to go work on that candelabra across the street with probably a 10 or 12 foot face. So select your company and make sure they're appropriately qualified. Check their reputation, check their insurance. This is an important point, pay attention. You should ask for a copy of their insurance certificate and have it on file at your facility before they climb on your tower. And any reputable firm will be able to provide you that instantly because they have to do it every day of the week. If they can't, find somebody else. Discuss a work plan with the supervisor, and the one that you don't see at the bottom down here is you should be on site when work is being performed. What happened? This was guy wire slippage during maintenance. So they had put a temporary device to hold the guy wire, and it slipped. They say, well, we'll just straighten that back up. Would you want that tower after they straighten it back up? Probably not, because you have no idea what stresses have been put on this. Okay, here's a big problem. I realize this is not a broadcast tower, but this brings up a point. We have a little problem with the foundation here. What's happened, actually, there's absolutely no problem with the concrete. It looks beautiful, doesn't it? Okay, what has happened here is a phenomenon called overturning moment, which what that means is that the load that was sticking up in the air was more than the foundation under the ground could support. What causes this sort of thing? Well, probably lack of a geotechnical report. For those of you that don't know what one of those are, anytime you dig a hole for an anchor or dig a hole for a tower base, you should have a geotechnical report done. And here's why. We have a whole department at my company full, I think we got half the PEs on the planet work there, and their job is to design foundations. But they can't do it if they don't have accurate inputs into the computer programs that they use. So their foundation calculations are absolutely no good without accurate soils data. The resultant finished foundation may not support the loads that are anticipated. Bad things happen. What are these bad things? Cracks in the foundation due to shifting. The whole foundation itself shifts. Overturning loads, we just saw that. They're not supported. Guy points can shift. That's really a bad thing if you got a guide tower. And they can move vertically, meaning the guy can pull out of the ground, which has the net effect of loosening your guy wires, which is not good. Could it get worse? Yeah, you bet. That's just about getting ready to fall right across the top of a building. So those poor guys, they got worse before it got better. By the way, it did not fall. They came in with a big crane and latched onto it after someone with very little common sense climbed up there and attached the cable. So the rest of the disaster was averted, but I'm sure cell service at the bottom was kind of poor. Okay. If an aircraft strikes your tower, and if it's more than 100 feet above ground, it can happen. Every federal and local agency with a badge you can dream of will build a tent in your lobby and examine you and every facet of your installation. There are going to be so many federal people there, you're going to think they're opening a branch office in your parking lot. I know, I've seen this many times. Here's some of the embarrassing questions, and they're embarrassing if you don't have the answers, that they're going to ask. Are all your permits in order? Is your paint job compliant, if required? Is your lighting working? How do you know it's working? Okay, are you at the right latitude and longitude? You have no idea how many FCC and FAA permits I've seen where the lat long doesn't match where the tower actually is. Are you FCC compliant per your license, and are you FAA compliant? And you'd think they'd talk to each other, but generally speaking, they don't. Okay? Is your structure registered? Everyone does realize by now you have to register your structures. Is the correct info on there? And I'm back to my soapbox in the front. Plan on getting sued. You will get sued at least once, usually multiple times. Involve your insurance company and your lawyer from the start. Make sure all your maintenance records are in order and available. Has anyone in this room had an aircraft strike their tower? We have several. Then you know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you? especially the part about them building a tent in your lobby. This is a potential outcome of something along that line. This is an actual photograph, not taken by me, of a television tower that was hit by an aircraft, and both of them lost. Okay, let's talk about sabotage and vandalism. Can't happen to you, right? Okay, if you will notice the date on this, this is July the 31st of this year. That's just a couple of months ago. This is a picture of a tower that right here that was cut down. Somebody took a cutting torch to one of the guy points and toppled the whole thing. How it missed those two buildings, I haven't a clue, but it did. All right. Admittedly rare, but it's a possibility you should consider. This is a very good incentive for you to have your fencing in good order. Have you considered putting a television camera or two out there? The last gentleman that was up here talked about cheap bandwidth back and forth between your transmitter site and your studio. What's wrong with having some cameras out there? Come on. It can happen. Fabrication-induced failures. This is welds that have failed, steel that's not of the advertised strength, and so forth. Another fairly rare event, but here's how you avoid that to the greatest certainty that you can. First of all, whoever you purchase your tower from, make sure they're an AISC certified steel fabricator. That's American Institute of Steel Construction. These are the people that regulate everything from girders in buildings to bridge, deck, steel, to towers. And they specify, as a matter of fact, they got a book about as thick as one of these tables about what you should and should not do. All the welding on that steel should be done by an AWS, American Welding Society, or CWB, Canadian Welding Board, certified welder. Any reputable tower manufacturer can provide these certificates to you upon request. And if you're going to make a multi-hundred-thousand-dollar or multi-million-dollar investment on behalf of your company, I would want these certifications in place. Structures should be hot-dip galvanized. There was a time and a place, my 50-year club back here, remembers when you bought black steel and you put it up and you painted it. And that was just the accepted way of doing things. Well, times have changed. Now we hot dip galvanize everything. Here's what the process looks like. That's called a kettle. This is ours, by the way. It's called a kettle. And basically what happens is the steel goes through five processes. The first four are actually preparation. It's dipped in an acid and various types of acids, and then finally a cleaner, and then it goes into the actual zinc right here. That's a fairly risky process, and here's what I mean. What happens is the steel comes up to the temperature of the galvanizing. Typically, like these right here, they probably set in this tank about 12 minutes and got up to 800 degrees, which is the temperature of the solution that they're going into. That's all fine and dandy, but what happens if you expand metal too quickly? You have an opportunity to crack welds and things. The industry term for that is called toe cracks, and where that came from, I don't know, but that's what they call them. And we actually, on critical welds like flanges like this, we post inspect those specifically for that. So once again, your tower provider should be able to provide you with a certificate that says that whatever facility they use is ASTM 123 certified. There's two really key elements that affect your system besides yourself. Mother Nature and Father Time. They sure they take a toll on us personally, and they take a toll on your tower as well. Were you thinking about the number two reason of failures? you folks up in this neck of the woods should definitely be able to relate to this. 29% of all tower failures just slightly after number one have to do with ice-related problems. Not a lot you can do about it, but it's something that you need to be aware of. This is special winds. This was down in Kansas, and there's the remnants of the beacon. There's the remnants of the building, and I bet there was a transmitter in there. And not much you can do about that either. Pretty much out of your control. Number three cause. Let's talk about guy wires a minute. I alluded to that earlier. It's the number five cause of failures. That looked like that really hurt. Think the transmitter came out okay? I kind of doubt it. That building doesn't actually look that old. Okay, up until about the mid-60s, my 50-year club again, even you 40-year guys, remember that if this is the surface of the ground, that most Gaia anchors were completely encased in concrete. Remember that? Well, after about the mid-60s, the cost of concrete went through the roof, and us manufacturers quit insisting it, so we've gone more to this sort of thing. And that means that this much of the rod is exposed to good old Mother Earth. Now, there's a lot of processes that are gone through to minimize this. They wrap them with various kinds of things. They coat them with various kinds of things. But still, all it takes is one nick when the contractor's putting it in and you got a source for corrosion to start. The other thing that happens is groundwater comes in here and it comes down about that far and it can't go anywhere, so it pools up on top of that concrete and causes corrosion issues right here. So what does all this mean to me? Well, that's where the turnbuckles were attached. Look what's down here. Nothing. Okay, number five cause. There's a close-up of it. This was a big old piece of I-beam. Look at there. 15 years old, estimated. Whose towers in here are 15 years old or older? Nearly everybody. Okay. Question to ask yourself. Okay, here's a picture down in the hole of where that came out of. Concrete looks great, doesn't it? All right, right there is where it disappeared into the concrete. This is the post-60 style. So from this point up, we were exposed to Mother Earth. You say, what can I do about that? Well, there are preventative measures that can be taken. There's something called a corrosion risk assessment. There are a number of firms out there that specifically engage in this. It's not expensive. This is something you should crank in your annual budget and have it done. You're talking just $400 to $500 per guy point to get this done, and most of you have three guy points. Some of you have six. Cheap insurance. It also involves ultrasonic testing and some physical inspection. They may actually dig some things up and look deeper. If you go to a corrosion person, make sure they're national certified. NACE is their association. I've seen some advertisements in some of the trade magazines. There are several companies out there. There's one out of Indianapolis that does nothing but this. Why did this tower leg fail? Well, if you notice, it looks pretty nice in there, relatively speaking, and this was caused by overstress, not corrosion. If you can see, there's a hole right through there. That's a very important hole, because what happens in these tower legs when they're tubular like this is condensation naturally occurs as we go through the heating and cooling cycles. Plus, there's potentially some rain leakage from various different places. And if this has nowhere to go and this tube fills up with water and we go through a Wisconsin winter, what's going to happen to that leg? It's going to split. See it all the time. That may or may not cause a failure, but it definitely should be replaced. All right. This is a case of some moron shooting at the tower. This is, happens to be at 108-foot level. There's 108 feet right there. Not a lot you can do about that, except there are patches available. In this particular place, it's really hard because you can't bolt around it because of where it is. I got a few more of those. There's one that's a little more interesting. I don't know what caliber that was, but I imagine you could have heard it for a ways. Look there, you got transmission line too. Here's another one, somebody shooting at the building and missed. All right. What can I say? Why hasn't this fallen down? Okay. There's a whole handful of rust. There's a whole bunch of rust in there, also known as terminal corrosion. Can't be saved. Doc says that one's done. This was caused more than likely, if you notice, there's no galvanizing on the inside of this, but there is on the outside. So this was probably an older tower that was done before they realized that they need to galvanize both the inside and the outside like we do today. That's another reason for those holes in the bottom and the top that we talked about. It allows the liquid zinc to run in there and coat everything. Okay, this may be difficult to see, but there's a crack that starts right there and goes right up there. This happened to be on a cellular tower. This is a bad thing. These aren't going to do anything but what we call propagate. Not the same propagate as you guys know, but it's going to continue to work itself down until it eventually reaches a point that it will fail. There is not a repair that can be done to this with it sticking up in the air. More than likely, there's been a lot of stress put on the piece of steel and would need to be replaced. By the way, this is a good reason why you have to physically inspect stuff. What does physically inspect mean? It does not mean stand at the bottom of the tower with a pair of binoculars and look up. It means hire somebody, if you don't have a guy on staff, to climb up there and take a look around. They're supposed to find stuff like this. All right, this is a cross section of a piece of pipe, and these are propagation cracks working from the outside in. How do I know that? Because it started here and it only got that far. This is called NDT, or non-destructive testing. It's an ultrasonic method. It's what we primarily use at Roan. We check critical wells both before they're hot dipped and after. Remember, I talked about toe cracks. Okay, let's talk about wind-induced problems. There are several types. The first one is low frequency, high amplitude. It's also known as galloping guy wires. If anybody has ever seen that, it's also an issue with power lines. It can be dampened out. Sometimes it's ice induced, and what happens is the ice forms on it and it forms an airfoil similar to an aircraft wing, which produces lift and drag, and it starts moving the wires around. Generally, galloping and flutter is related. It's a phenomenon that occurs when the motion of the structure generates fluid forces that reinforce the vibration. And I'm not going to go into the explanation of this, but the structure becomes part of the problem. Okay, you can't quite see this, but the other type of vibration where we were looking at exactly the opposite of this. This is high frequency, low amplitude. It's also known as Aeolian vibration. And this is called a Stockbridge dampener. It's got two little counterweights out here. You probably see these pretty commonly on power lines. And that's the reason why. Also, your larger broadcast towers, particularly above 1,000 feet AGL, most of your reputable manufacturers, if you remember World Tower and Stainless, they all employed these things. Okay, what happens if you get this vibration going? It usually causes fatigue in the guy wire strands themselves, and the common failure points are at the end where they can no longer flex. I'm going to show you some samples here. Here are some wire samples that have been subject to, these are actual guy wire samples that have been subject to various kinds of vibration. These are bad things because you don't know what you don't know. You can't see anything beyond here. There could be equivalent damage where you can't see it. These cables are not repairable. They just have to be replaced. A question you should ask yourself if you find this condition on your structure is why? Were your guy wires not tensioned properly? Do you need the Stockbridge dampeners or what? If you don't know how to do this, get yourself a tower company that does. So let's talk about a few knowns here, and we'll finish up in time for a couple questions if you got it. A well-designed tower has a lot of safety factors built into it. Generally speaking, when we design a tower for a client at Rhone, it's over-designed because we anticipate that you're going to add more stuff to it over a period of time and things happen. However, no design can save you a problem due to a lack of periodic maintenance. Remember, you got to go to the doctor every now and again. You need to have the doctor look at your tower. Acts of God. Tornadoes and things like that, there's just no predicting it. Sabotage and vandals happens when you least expect it, and it is a possibility. Anchor failure, we just talked about that. This is something that you should pay attention to if your tower is 15 years of age or older. Get it in your budget and just get her done. Critical mistakes during erection or modification and unauthorized, non-engineered modifications. I am just as guilty as most of you sitting in this room of saying, let's just throw another antenna up on the tower. And when it's the only thing on there, it probably doesn't make a difference. But when you've already got a dozen other transmission lines running up there and other things hanging off of it, all over it, you should find out what the situation is before you do it. All right. I'm here as a courtesy of my employer. I hope you enjoyed what I had to say and you found some of it a little bit useful. We've been building towers for 65 years down in Peoria, a few hours south of here. We've learned a lot over that period of time. There are a lot of good tower manufacturers out there. I urge you that when your time comes to either replace or build a new structure, that you seek out a reputable manufacturer, no matter who that is. I've pointed out some things you need to ask them along the way, certificates that you need to have, and any manufacturer that's not willing to provide these to you should be avoided. I've got a few minutes for questions here, plus just a moment, and if any of you don't want to ask it in this environment, you can call Rhone or just email me down there, and I'll be happy to answer your question. Yes, sir.
Okay, I have a question back here.
Okay.
We're putting up towers right now, and I was surprised to discover that the geo survey, nobody had to come on site to do that this time. There is a company out there that will give you your soil data, and they do it by interrogating some national database that apparently has in it the ground values all over the country. Have you heard of that before? And is it something, I'm one of the 40-year guys you've been talking about. Something inside of me doesn't feel comfortable with that, but it's something my subcontractor recommended and we went with. It didn't necessarily feel like it was much cheaper, by the way.
Okay, let's talk about that. That's called geotechnical analysis by interpolation. And what they're doing is exactly what you just pointed out. They're looking at national databases based on averages. The only true way to know what's going on is go drill a hole in the ground. There's one exception to that, and that is if you've put up another tower on the site, or right next to it, or just down the street, chances are that those geotech reports that are already on file with somebody are probably good as good enough. However, while what you've just mentioned is an accepted practice, I find it quite dubious, and that's an opinion. Okay? Who's next? Yes, sir.
I have a 25-year-old tower, and it's loaded within the original specification of the design.
However, within, you said?
Within.
Okay.
However, I would like to add more stuff to it, but given that the design of antennas have changed over these 25 years, I want to get in a study done from a firm to verify that it's okay to put my antenna on there. However, my regular engineering firm said, no, we don't want to do that because that was designed with the older specification, and we're not going to design, we know it's not going to meet the current spec for ice and wind loading, so we're not going to do the study for the older spec either. Can you just clarify that? Is that something that's common?
Sure. What's happened is, like most specifications and the rest of our rules and regulations, they've evolved over time. And the 222, TIA 222, which regulates tower design, is about to change again in about another year and a half. It's going to get more stringent yet. Now, at the time your tower was built, I don't know which rev it was under, but it was sufficient for the time. Okay, so you have two options. And this is probably what I would do if I was you, and this is not expensive. This study, depending on how big your tower is, should not be over between $500 and $1,500, depending on how much junk you got hanging on it. Okay, you can ask them to run it under the rev that was current at the time of design, which is appropriate, or you can ask them also to run it under the current rev and see if you would meet the current rev. There's a reasonably good chance you would, because mostly what's happened is the regs have gotten tighter, but they are generally related to wind loading. Okay, what's happened is we've gotten a lot smarter about wind loading, particularly we no longer use the same wind path for Kansas as we do for Galveston, Texas. And so what they've done is it's actually, there is a database now that's county by county for the entire country that allows you to determine your appropriate wind loading. There are a number of good consulting firms out there who will do this for you and shouldn't give you a bit of static about it at all. And if you'd like specific recommendations, just feel free to contact me. I'll give you a list of them, or if you want Roan to do it, we can do it too. We do it all day, every day. Yes, sir, back here.
Yes, I've got a vintage 1984 tower, 500 foot tall, that was built by Utility, which is no longer with us. It is the black steel that you made reference to earlier, and it is solid leg. Are there any special considerations for maintenance, things to watch for on the black steel towers?
Okay, and you said it was a solid rod leg, correct?
Yes, and okay. It does not appear to have rust problem. I mean, a few splotches where the paint's been scraped away by tower riggers and their hooks, but for the most part, no rust problems.
Okay, before you give the microphone up, one more question.
Yes.
The cross members, are they welded or bolted?
I believe they are welded. I'd have to double check.
Okay.
Give me the advice both ways, and I'll go back home and check.
Okay. On solid rod towers, does everybody know what we're talking about when we talk about solid rod? Okay. The legs were solid opposed to pipe. On solid rod towers, the biggest issues had to do with bolt tensions on the cross members. Over time, the twisting moment from wind, temperature, coefficient, heating and cooling causes nuts and bolts to lock up. We put a thing on the end of the bolt called a pal nut. Does everybody know what a pal nut is? It's that little flimsy looking nut that backs up the real nut. And the whole purpose of that, in lieu of a lock washer, is to keep that nut from loosening up. But a lot of tower erectors didn't bother because it takes an extra 30 seconds to put that on, so a lot of them left it off. Shame on you for not catching it when they put it up because it was in your spec. But nevertheless, if it's a bolted tower, make sure that your bolt tensions are good. And the only way to check that is have a crew go up there and take a wrench and check it. If it's welded, that's a lot better scenario because very few things happen to solid rod welded towers. If you haven't had any catastrophic events like guy wire failures or twisting events, chances are a good visual inspection is all you need. Obviously, stresses on steel get higher as closer you come to the bottom as the vertical load increases. So, generally speaking, most inspectors pay more attention to the bottom half of the tower than they do the top half. Does that answer your question? Okay, good. Yes, sir, back here.
I had a couple things. I can't count the number of times I've had station owners come to me and they want to throw, say, a small television type Yagi on a tower. More recently, I remember some additional equipment they wanted to throw on some cell phone antennas that were up there. And statement was made, it's very light equipment, only weighs about 60 pounds a piece, et cetera, et cetera. And then when you look at the spec on it, you're ending up actually with, you know, 300-400 pounds total added to the tower, not to mention the wind loading of the extra lines. So when they come to me, generally, I've just been telling them I'm not a structural engineer. I recommend a structural study. However, you know, there might be a fine line where I don't know if it's appropriate to say, you know, you're throwing up a small FM antenna with an RG58 going up to it. The problem I see with that is if they've had a series of people before you and they haven't had a study, it may not be the actual straw that broke the camel's back, but when was that last structural study done? You know, I don't want to be the guy that says, yeah, go ahead and throw that Yagi up there and then find out, you know, they assume that all this other stuff was okay. Do you have any recommendations there?
Well, let me make a couple comments before you give the microphone up. Are you a consulting engineer, sir?
I do some contract engineering.
Okay. So technically, whatever you recommend, you're going to take responsibility for.
Right.
Okay. I'll give you two answers. I'll give you the official answer, which is you're crazy to allow anybody to put anything on a tower without recommending a study. Whether they choose to do it or not is up to them, okay? But since you've made the recommendation, you're effectively off the hook, unless it's just really something stupid and that you can't abide with. The unofficial answer is, let's use a little common sense. A little common sense is if somebody's going to stick a good time TV antenna up there so that now they can get DTV, unlikely that's going to cause an issue. But you just ran a big red flag up in front of me when you said cellular. And I don't know whether you mean like a cellular base station antenna or what, but cellular base station antenna pods that you see regularly on these monopoles, they have an amazing amount of wind loading. You just wouldn't believe the amount of wind loading. And sometimes it's more than 200 square feet of effective wind loading. And that would run up huge red flags. But I would say from a professional side, you have to recommend it. From a common sense side, use your best judgment.
Right, and it was, I believe, a small amplifiers they were adding. Part of the, I believe it was a upgrade to 4 LTE or something of that nature. But, and that's the position I've always held is one guy basically said, well, off the record, and this was a smaller antenna like the Yagi I was saying about, I said, well, off the record, I can't really say this, but I'm not a structural engineer, but like I said, and basically the same type of statement, you can use some common sense there, but I didn't tell you to do that officially. I have to tell you to do a structural engineer, and then I put that back up in writing just for that reason. But
yeah, for crying out loud, don't put it in writing.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to ask is, you mentioned and showed an example of a tubular hollow leg tower that had corrosion from the inside, and dealing with a lot of those, and obviously they're painted over the years. Are you seeing any particular brand towers to watch out for that didn't have the internal galvanization?
Brand-wise, no. Location-wise, yes. if it's within 150 miles of any coastline, you should be concerned. And that's for obvious reasons. We're talking about salt air here. I see a lot of it. We build and maintain a lot of towers down in the Caribbean and Central and Latin America, Guatemala, Belize, down through there. And salt water really does a number on these structures, particularly if they're not galvanized.
So in our area, we'd be more concerned about making sure the weep holes are open and
exactly. Your biggest issue here has to do with ice and splitting of tower legs. There was a question back over this direction.
Yeah, your opinion of safety and strength of guide towers versus self-supporters, like under 200 feet, and also solid steel versus the tubular hollow towers?
I will tell you that all four of those choices you just gave me can be functionally equivalent if they're properly designed. In many cases, I see self-supporting towers going up in place of guide towers strictly for real estate considerations. And they can't, there is a cost trade-off. Obviously, a guide tower is a little more inexpensive than a self-supporting tower, not including the real estate involved. However, if properly designed, they can be equivalent. As far as solid rod versus tube, was that the other half of your question? I have a personal preference for solid rod tower, but you should realize there's trade-off there with cost. But for this room right here, if you build something with a solid rod tower, you're going to be retired and gone before you have to worry about it. Okay? Any other questions? I'm a little over. All right, please feel free to reach me at Roan if you've got any specific questions you weren't comfortable asking in this open environment, and it's been a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you very much.